Welcome to the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, your weekly dose of accounting and tax tips specific to small business owners. You will be on your way to growing your business and paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. Here's your host, Mike Jezoshek, CPA.
Today we are doing a listener Q&A session, and I absolutely love these sessions because it gives you, the listener, the opportunity to submit questions that you have, and we're going to answer them live on today's episode. Now, if you want your question answered in a future episode, you can submit them at any point in time. We'll add them to the queue on our list, and then we'll answer them on a next Q&A episode. You can go to taxsavingspodcast.com, click podcast, scroll to the bottom, and there's going to be an area where you can submit your question. You never know. Your question might be picked for our next Q&A session where we answer your question live on an episode. Also remember that if you are a member of TaxHelm, these are questions that you can ask us any day, all day, where you have unlimited access to our team of tax experts, where we will give personalized, specific advice to you. So if you're interested in that, check out TaxHelm, TaxHelm.com. All right, so let's dive into today's questions from listeners. First one we have is from Katie, and they said, I purchased a home in 2022 and lived in it for 2 years before starting to rent it out. I did not know anything about depreciation or bonus depreciation when I converted this into a rental property. Can you retroactively claim depreciation for previous tax years? I'm assuming you can't retroactively apply bonus depreciation for 2020. Thanks so much. Katie, great question. And so for first of all, when we convert a rental or a personal residence into a rental property, there is a strategy where sometimes that we might want to sell this entity to our S corporation. Now, traditionally, we never ever wanted a rental property into our S corporation or into an S corporation. But sometimes, if the sale is big enough, if the value of the property is big enough, sometimes we might want to look at that strategy. And I'm not going to cover that here, but I want to answer your question specifically about depreciation. So, just as a recap, had a personal residence, converted it to a rental property, didn't realize you could take depreciation on that rental property, and haven't taken depreciation on it. Now we're a couple years later and you're wondering, can we take depreciation on it now? So two options. First, we can file an amended return. Now, this might be a little bit more complex. We have to go through that whole amended process, take the depreciation on it, do that for every year, might open up the door for an audit window further. So that's one option. The second option is we file Form 3115, which is a change in accounting method, and do that catch up on depreciation now here in this year. So that is typically going to be the recommendation that I would go down, is get that catch up now. But definitely you can take advantage of the depreciation that you forgot to take. And there's just a few different routes you want to go on. Now, you mentioned this idea of bonus depreciation. And so I just want to make this a little caveat. Watch out for bonus depreciation on a rental property if you don't have some sort of cost segregation study that goes along with it. So traditionally, we're going to pair a rental property, if it makes sense and the numbers pan out, but we're going to pair a rental property with a cost seg study, and that's where we get this opportunity of accelerated depreciation, whether that's bonus or whether that's 3, 5, 7 year depreciation, quicker than the typical 27 and a half or 39 years of depreciation if we do the straight line option. So definitely check out that. We did an episode recently on cost segregation studies, when those make sense, and information about those. So definitely check that out. Next question we have is from Jeff. And he said, I have an existing business that is 9 years old. We are starting a new division of the company out of the same location that requires a different accounting system and field service software. However, we are technically keeping the DBA name for both the same because our new business is complementary to what we do now, and it makes sense to keep that. How do you recommend setting this up? I'm concerned about payroll. Sales employees will sell for both divisions, shared marketing expenses, making sure that we track profit and loss for both entities separate, and the list goes on. Jeff, so yeah, we see this a lot, and we recently did an episode a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago now. We talked about how to structure multiple businesses. If you're with a partner, or whether that is if you have multiple business entities that you are ownership in. And so my recommendation in this setup would be to have that new entity you set up be 100% owned by your current company. Now, I'm assuming that there's some S-corp things and S-corp that comes into play here. And let's say your current company right now is an S-corporation. You could have that S-corporation. You start a new LLC with this new entity and a DB as a subsidiary of that S-corporation. So that S-corporation would own 100% of that separate entity. What that does is it creates two separate entities. it creates protection from that standpoint, but now you have two separate entities. And what I would do in this situation, if it's not easy to specifically pull out payroll and all these different things, is you could run these expenses through your parent company, that main company that you have, and then have that subsidiary refund for their portion of expenses. So let's say you have a sales employee that sells for two companies of yours, and you don't want to separate out to have run payroll for two separate companies. You could pay them out of the main parent organization and then understand, okay, let's say we paid a salesperson $10,000 in commissions. Three was from this separate entity. Well, you could have that separate entity reimburse or make an expense, a management fee towards your parent entity for their portion of payroll. And then you can then, on the separate financials for each entity, you'll have that breakdown. So that would be my recommendation. It's going to be create some more complexities, create some more hassle there. I'm assuming that you want these separate for tracking purposes, maybe a potential sale of the subsidiary without the parent or vice versa. So a little bit of work on the accounting side, but definitely doable as long as you're tracking and have that kind of data readily available. So Jeff, that would be kind of my recommendation. Again, check out our episode where we talked about how to structure when you own multiple businesses, and that's going to lead some feedback on that too. Julia says, I love the podcast. My husband and I co-own an industrial services company in which we own and operate commercial vehicles and employ drivers. In a slight departure from this, we are preparing to hire a project manager who will need a company vehicle. We are considering handing down a work truck that is currently owned and used by my husband, bought and paid off before the company was founded. How should we handle this? Should the company purchase the vehicle from us? Should we donate the vehicle to the company and write it off? Thank you. Julia, yeah, so in this situation, my recommendation as always is to just make a contribution of the vehicle to the business. Now, you're going to have to understand what the fair market value of that vehicle is when you're contributing to the business. So let's say you bought that vehicle 5 years ago for $80,000 and you contribute it now. It doesn't go on the books of the business at $80,000. It's going to be whatever the fair market value is on the date of that contribution. So again, the process I would do is contribute that personal vehicle into the business. Find out what the fair market value is, and that's going to be your starting depreciation base. So you're still going to be able to take depreciation and everything else on this vehicle, but you need that starting basis in that vehicle is going to be whatever the fair market value is on the date that you can contribute it to the business. So how this would look from an accounting standpoint is you would have an owner's contribution and an asset that goes on the books. So an owner's contribution and an asset, and then obviously you'd get the deduction on the income statement through depreciation of that asset. Next question we have is from Gigi. My consulting business income is variable throughout the year. Quarter one is slow compared to the rest. Do quarterly estimated tax payments need to be equal? We've been using the safe harbor method, but wondering if that's not the right choice. So if you're using the safe harbor method, yes, they have to be equal. And that's typically my recommendation, unless you're kind of in a hard spot for cash wise. If your income is significantly different quarter to quarter, where you have a big quarter and an off quarter, maybe just one massive quarter and the rest are lower, whatever it might be, there is another option that the IRS allows, and that's called the annualized income installment method. So this is going to be a little bit more complex because when we go to file your tax return and maybe the IRS is planning to hit you with some underpayments or penalties, we're going to file Form 2210. And on that Form 2210, there's going to be a Schedule AI. And that Schedule AI is where you're going to be able to break down your income based on the quarters that, and specifically where that income was earned. So yes, that's an option. The annualized income installment method. Again, when you file your tax return, you're going to use Form 2210, and then you're going to use Schedule AI on that Form 2210, and you're going to break down your income by quarter that kind of matches then your new estimated tax payments. A little bit more work, a little bit more complexities. I would say if you have the money, if you can make it work, safe harbors is an easier option. This is definitely an allowable, acceptable option by the IRS. So check out that out. Again, remember, Form 2210, Schedule AI on Form 2210 that you'll want to check out. Question from Curtis. My daughter goes to community college full time. Can I write off tuition, books, and use the mileage rate for commuting costs as part of the related expenses? Okay, so Curtis, one thing is the commuting would never be a deductible business expense or a deductible expense. But as far as the deduction for the tuition books, you're going to want to look, if you're looking at it on the personal side, if this is a question on the personal side, you're going to want to look at the American Opportunity Tax Credit, AOTC, or the Lifetime Learning Credit. And that's where you're going to be able to get a tax credit for educational costs. So that's going to be an option for you. Now, if you're a business owner, which I assume if you're listening to this or watching us on our YouTube channel, that you're a business owner, I would recommend something else. I would say, how can we find a way for your child to do some work in your business and hire your child? Now, because they're over the age of 18, likely, we would probably hire them as a 1099 contractor. So let's say you own a consulting business, and maybe your child's going to do some social media marketing for you. Maybe they're going to do some administrative work or maybe some consulting work, whatever it might be, just on the side while they're going to college. So if they're doing that work for you, you're going to pay them a 1099, again, a reasonable rate for the work they're doing, the job, everything else. You're going to get a business deduction for that, but you're going to have to send a 1099 to your child. Now, your child's going to have 1099 income. But the cool thing about this is that they can offset some of that income just like you are in your business, they can do in their business. So if they have a board meeting in their business, they have a home office in their business, they have software expense, computer expenses, maybe they go to visit their client, which happens to be your business deduction for that. So now that travel that they might be doing, potentially depending on where the college is, how far away is, things like that, but now they're going to be able to get a deduction to help offset some or all of that income. So let's say you hire your child for $10,000. You're sending them a 1099 now for $10,000, just as an easy example. Maybe they're able to find about $7,000 in expenses to offset that. Now they're only paying taxes on $3,000 in a lower income tax bracket. That would be my recommendation of how to kind of, when we talk about this concept of moving after-tax spending into pre-tax spending, this is a great opportunity to do it. But again, like I said, you do have some tax credits available on the personal side as well, but check into the hiring your child, especially in the college days. I love that strategy, and also get some used to kind of being in the working world as well.
This episode is brought to you by Taxome. At Taxome, we understand that saving taxes can be complex and overwhelming for business owners. That's why we're here, to be that tax strategist in your back pocket, ensuring that you pay the least amount in taxes as legally possible. With Taxome, you receive a tax savings blueprint tailored to your business needs, unlimited access to our team of tax experts, and an annual one-on-one live consultation. You'll also have access to our comprehensive training with videos, downloads, templates, workbooks, guides, and so much more, along with our monthly live trainings to keep you informed and in control. Thousands of business owners across the country trust Taxome. It's time you did too. Visit us now and take that first step towards paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. There has never been a better time to join Taxome. Do not forget about our 30-day money-back guarantee. We guarantee that we will present tax-saving strategies that will, at a minimum, cover the cost of your subscription fee or your money back. This is your risk-free invitation to explore the benefits of Taxome membership and how it can transform your approach to tax planning and savings. Go to taxelm.com. That is TAXELM.com. Now back to the show.
A question from Tony. How do charitable contributions work for S corporations? Is it deductible at the corp level or passed through to the shareholder? Yeah, so if you make a charitable contribution at the S corp level, that's going to be reported and passed through to the owner, who will then take it as a charitable contribution on the itemized deduction Schedule A on their personal tax return. So it passes through to them on the K-1 through the K-1. Now, we talk about this a lot of saying, okay, how can we maybe do some planning strategies? Because the problem with charitable contributions is that they're an itemized deduction now. And a lot of people no longer take itemized deductions because the standard deduction is much higher than it ever was before. So many people say, I don't have enough itemized deductions, so I'm taking the standard deduction, obviously, because if the standard deduction is more than itemized, I'm going to take that. And so a lot of people don't get to take advantage of this charitable contributions that they used to, or maybe used to be able to. And so as a business, we say, okay, is there a way that we can find a different category? Now, we might be helping charity, but is there a way that we can maybe turn this into advertising? We did a charity drive 1 year for the podcast, and we said, hey, anyone that leaves a review for our podcast, we're going to donate X amount to this charity that we believe in. And so for every review we got, we made a donation to charity. To me, that's advertising expense, because that helped grow our podcast. That helped people bring awareness to our podcast. And I'm supporting the charity that I want to. And so that move right there moved it from a charitable contribution that's going to pass through, flow through to me, and then be a Schedule A item into an advertising expense for the business, even though we're supporting charity. So I like this concept, if we're talking about charity, to find a way, if there's a way to shift that into a different category, if possible. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it's not possible. But oftentimes there's a way to find a business advertising route that we can go down with that. Scott said, do you have more info about putting a spouse on the board? I'm a financial advisor and would like to hire my wife to help with clerical work. So Scott, I think the question you're asking is not necessarily put a spouse on the board, but just hiring the spouse, having them do work in your business. We did do an episode on this. It was back in August of 2023. We did an episode called Hiring Your Spouse, Business Boost or Bust. And so let's look up that. We went into this in a lot of detail. Generally stating, we do not want to hire our spouse in our business. Why? Because we have to pay payroll taxes when we hire a spouse in our business that we don't necessarily need to, or that we could avoid if we didn't hire them. But there are a few instances on when we would hire a spouse. First one being is if we want to maximize retirement accounts, having a spouse on payroll definitely opens up the door to that. Second reason is if we have high medical costs, having a spouse on board can definitely create a strategy around a Section 105, different planning around that. But definitely check that out. Now, having a spouse on a board versus a full-time or a regular employment would be a little bit different, but check out that episode again back in August of 2023. Question from Lori. She said, I was wondering if you could discuss cost of goods sold as a tax deduction, especially how to handle tax deductions for goods that were bought in one tax year but haven't yet sold. Yes. So a cost of goods sold is you're going to get the deduction in the year that you sell it. So this is, let's say that you are a manufacturer or something like that. You're going to get a cost of goods sold, COGS expense, in the year that you sell that product or that piece of inventory that you have. And so that's a key thing. Let's say you bought a bunch of inventory at the end of the year, but didn't sell any of it. Well, that's not necessarily a deduction until you sell those items. So you're going to want to keep track and keep record of your inventory balance at the end of each year so that you can then factor in what your cost of goods sold is going to be. So hopefully that was helpful, Lauren. All right, we have a long one here. This is from Jasper. We love your podcast. What are the benefits and mechanics of paying payroll taxes on a spouse who works as a real estate professional? Okay, so we kind of just went through the same question with Scott. Definitely check out the Hiring Your Spouse Business Booster Bust, an episode that we did back in August of 2023. But they're saying both parents show wages for childcare to be tax deductible, can put almost all the spouse's income into a Roth 401k. Their income is an expense on Schedule E, so it's deductible. A match on a 401k, 401k startup tax credit. Could it act as additional evidence for a spouse's real estate professional drawback? Okay, yeah. So what they're saying is that they're trying to look at all the benefits of hiring a spouse and what we look at that. So first off, main reason we're going to hire a spouse is going to be we want to max out retirement, which is specifically nothing in healthcare was related here. So if you're looking to fully maximize retirement and you can't do it yourself already, then hiring your spouse in your business could be a great option for that. They can contribute the max. If you have a solo 401k set up, they can contribute the employee portion, which I think is $20,005 or somewhere in that area for 2024. And then there can also be an employer match on the S-Corp side up to 25% of the W-2 wages. So a great option there to maximize retirement accounts. Now, I don't believe the tax credit would qualify because they would be considered a highly compensated employee or part of the tainted group, which isn't, you know, related to the owner of the company. So I don't think that would work for the startup tax credit, but could work for the retirement plan. Again, if you are really looking to maximize it and you're already doing it personally, that's when we look to maybe bring in a spouse. Just run the numbers on that. We did an episode a couple weeks back with Matt Runtberg over at Life Inc. Retirement Services. They are great on this topic. So if you have questions, reach out to Matt. We have a link, and otherwise just hit us up in an email. I can always introduce you to Matt to talk about retirement accounts, what qualifies for the tax credit, what doesn't, what the costs of setting up a 401k is. They help with those things. So definitely check out that. We have a question from Katie. My husband and I opened an LLC last summer to rent out our backyard pool. I brought in very little money from renting out the pool. This was received in my personal checking account. I now have a business checking account. I opened this LLC to rent out the pool as a business as a way to generate tax deductions on our personal taxes. Because I had such little pool rental revenue in 2023, is it worth it to consider this in my 2023 tax return? Am I still eligible to claim any deductions and so on? So Katie, the first thing that would really concern me on this is, was this pool used personally? Because if so, you're going down a path that is more work than what you're going to get anything out of it as a deduction. So, and you can run some very sticky issues with the IRS. And if you're saying, no, I don't use it personally at all, I would think $600 from a pool rental that you've never used personally, it would just be hard to talk to the IRS about. So first of all, I just want to make sure, are we doing the right thing here? This is something the IRS might come sniffing at and be like, I see what's going on here. This isn't allowed. If you're ever going to start a business in a rental or something like that, you need to make sure that you are doing things dotting your I's, crossing your T's, especially when from initial glance, it can smell a little stinky. So just, I just want to forewarn you, make sure you're doing things correctly. It's hard to know without the details here of what's actually going on. But just building a pool in your backyard and saying, oh, we're just going to take a deduction for it and claim it as a business, I'm going to rent that pool out, likely is not going to fly past the IRS radar unless we have some deep details. You do other rentals, your backyard is always rental. We can go down that path, but just be careful, Katie. We don't want to push the limits and boundary too far because they will attack everything then. So just be careful, Katie. You can always join TaxOM if you want more details or want to submit more details and we can give them kind of more personalized advice. Feel free to join TaxOM. You have unlimited access to our team of tax experts to go through that. Two more questions, and then we're going to cut off this Q&A episode. Angie says, I've had a CPA tell me that an S-Corp is not worth having as long as the QBI deduction is an option. Can you talk about that and what income scenarios it would affect? Angie, you know, I've done a lot of different calculations and scenarios, and 98% of the time, 99% of the time, the S-Corp plays out. As long as we're following that, making $50,000 or more per year, 98% of the time, the S-Corporation plays out as a better option. So I would just ask for the proof. Give them your scenario. Again, your income, your wages, your property, all that is going to play a role into this. And in how big is your income? How little is your income? There's a lot of calculations that we can run. Again, if you're interested in having us run these for you, join TaxOM. Our team of experts would be more than happy to help you out with that. But I would ask your tax preparer to show you the numbers. Say, okay, tax preparer, here is my details. You're my tax preparer. Show me what the deduction would be without an S-Corp and with an S-Corporation. And make sure that they're being that reasonable salary is the right salary that you would take that would be considered reasonable, because they might plump it up just to make their life easier or whatever it might be. So just ask them for the numbers, ask them for the breakdown, and it should become pretty clear whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense. All right, last question, and this is from an anonymous Facebook group member. And by the way, if you're not a member of our free Facebook group, go there now, go to facebook.com, type in Small Business Tax Secrets, and join our free Facebook group where you can submit questions there. And there's a community of other business owners and things that are hanging out there. But definitely check that out. With this Facebook group member said, looking for advice on ways to help offset taxes owed. I started a business in March of 23. By January of 24, my business has grown a good bit. I'm a bit concerned about how hard I'm going to get hit at tax time for 2024. And I'm looking for ways to help lower my income. And they said, I'm just reading forward here. Income so far this year, first 3 months, was $100,000. At this rate, I'll end up with taxable income of around $320,000 without taking any more business growth. I've taken depreciation on equipment vehicles already. I'm an LLC set up to file as a sole proprietor right now. Okay. As per my accountant's suggestion, but really starting to wonder if I should be filing as an S-Corp based on some things I've read online. All right. So anonymous Facebook member, first off, based on the information that you've provided here, more than likely an S-Corporation is going to be the route that you want to go down. And so that's going to be our starting base of saying, okay, when we look at lowering taxes, where do we start? Let's start with that S-Corporation. Let's get that reasonable salary set up. Let's start doing those. And let's talk about everything else we talk about in our podcast. And you talked about depreciation and vehicles. That's great. Let's talk about maximizing deductions, taking things from after-tax spending into pre-tax spending. What options are available there? And all the strategies that come around that with hiring our kids, 14-day home rental, equipment and technology expenses, and everything we talk about there, meals, travel, and opportunities that become available with those items. We can talk about retirement. We can talk about health cost expense. And, you know, if your income goes into that $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 or more, that opens up the door to more advanced planning, advanced strategies that we can implement as well. So I would say a lot of options on how we can continue to lower that tax bill as much as legally possible. But also the S-Corporation would be a starting point. And based on the information you have there, definitely would qualify as a great opportunity, a great candidate for an S-Corporation. But check out our podcast episodes. You're in the right place. We talk about this every week. We're talking about something that can help you pay the least amount of taxes legally possible. That's my mission. That's my goal. If you want more personal advice, you want deeper training with workbooks, guides, handbooks, templates, and implementation help strategies, all that, check out TaxOM, where we kind of deep dive into this, where you also get unlimited access to our team and an annual one-on-one live consultation with a tax expert. So definitely check that out, but you're in the right place. This is our bread and butter. Definitely take the S-Corporation seriously, because based on what you said here, I'm leaning heavily towards that way right away. All right, so that's what we have today. Again, if you are interested in having one of your questions answered live on one of our next episodes, go ahead to our website, go to taxsavingspodcast.com, click podcast up top, scroll to the bottom. There's going to be an area there where you can submit your question. would be happy to answer your questions live on our next Q&A episode. And if you want to ask these questions and have unlimited access to our tax teams, check out TaxElm, TaxElm.com. You have unlimited access to any questions that you have, customized, perfect to your solution with our team of tax experts. Definitely check that out as well. I want to thank you. Thank you for submitting your questions. Thank you for supporting us. We love you guys. And this is truly my mission, is to help every small business owner out there understand what strategies are available to them and how they can pay the least amount in taxes as legally possible. So I want to thank you for tuning in. Thank you for submitting your questions. And I hope to see more come through so we can answer even more of your questions on our next Q&A episode. Thank you again for listening. And I will see you next week.
This has been another episode of the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast. If you enjoy our weekly episodes, please leave a review and share with other business owners. You can find previous episodes and more information at www.taxsavingspodcast.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.